But first, the collateral costs of conservation. More than three decades ago, the Mountain Gorilla Project started a gorilla tourism program to save the threatened gorilla population from poaching. The project hired poachers as park rangers and demonstrated that live gorillas were much more valuable as tourist attractions than dead ones. Since then, gorilla tourism has added hundreds of millions to foreign tourist dollars to state coffers in Central Africa, and the Great Ape populations have seen a modest rebound. Some scientists warn that the economic incentives of gorilla tourism may be taking over the goals of conservation. Michelle Goldsmith is among them. She's a primatologist who teaches at Southern New Hampshire University and a former colleague of Jane Goodall. She'll be speaking about the delicate balance of ecotourism at the TEDx Amiskeg Millyard event, which I will be hosting on Saturday in Manchester. But first, Michelle joins me here in Concord. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
So how close to extinction were the mountain gorillas before ecotourism? This project in particular, and how are they doing now?
Yeah, I just want to preface that by just saying that it's really hard to estimate numbers, and that's a whole science in itself, being able to perform censuses and figure out how many individuals there are. But if we just take the Virungas, they have the longest history. In 1960, when George Schaller first went there, there was probably between 450 individuals in this small area.
And this is in the Virunga Park. It spreads through Democratic Republic of Congo and Rwanda, right?
Right. And Uganda. Mm-hmm. So all three. Not a very healthy place to live if you're a gorilla. And their estimates were between 450 individuals at that time. Then right around before tourism was starting, it had halved down to about 240 mm-hmm. Individuals. And the most recent census in 2011 estimate there to be almost perhaps 480.
Wow. So a jump, certainly.
Yeah.
But how much money is actually being made? Obviously, there has to be an incentive here financially for villagers, for governments to get behind it. How much money is being made from gorilla tourism now?
Well, we could go to Bwindi, which is where I work, which has a very healthy population of mountain gorillas as well. And tourism started there in 1993, and it started very modestly. There was only two groups habituated for tourists. There were only six tourists allowed to each one of the groups, and the fee was only about $150. But, you know, go ahead to 2011, and we now have nine groups that tourists visit each day. There are eight tourists that go to each group, and the fee has increased to about minimum of $500, sometimes $750 on peak. Mm. So at any day, the Ugandan Wildlife Authority is bringing in $36,000 or more in fees.
It's a big hit. But I want to go back to that word habituation that you mentioned, because that's kind of at the key of the struggle here, or the tension between conservation and tourism dollars. What do you mean by habituation?
Well, in order for tourism to be successful, tourists have to be able to view the gorillas.
They're take not, their photographs,
right,
et cetera.
They're not guaranteed a view, but almost all times they do. And the habituation process is the slow acclimation of the presence of humans in the presence of gorillas over time, so that they become accustomed to your presence. And, you know, it's finished when you pretty much become a neutral element in the animal's environment. I personally don't believe that there's a case where a human is ever a neutral element in an animal's environment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, habituation is necessary for both tourism and for research.
In fact, you actually cited in one of your studies about this, if I got it right, that the human beings who stealthily approach are actually much mm-hmm. more it's much worse for the great ape population, or for their reaction. One is supposed to sort of announce oneself or tear a leaf, so you have to sort of appear and then go. Is that the idea?
Yes, and over time just become you know, habituation is actually a learning concept. You know, animals learn to ignore something in their environment, like pigeons in the park.
Right, or squirrels, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know, they'll come right up to us in the park or whatever. We're talking about the pros and cons of ecotourism, specifically gorilla tourism, with Michelle Goldsmith. She's a professor at Southern New Hampshire University and a primatologist. Done a great deal of work with the great apes, and she's going to be speaking at the upcoming TEDx Amiskeg Millyard event on Saturday in Manchester. Okay, so what is the real danger of habituation here? How does that affect the population of the great apes?
You know, I've been looking at that in this particular region in Bwindi since about 1999. And one of the first things that happens when gorillas lose their fear of humans is they start coming outside the park. In Bwindi, unfortunately, the park border is abutted with plantations, eucalyptus, banana plants, which gorillas love. And, you know, once they come out of the park and they spend, some of my earliest research shows that they were spending at that point 55% of the time outside the park. My latest research shows they're spending up to 75 to 80% of their time outside the park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they become pests. They start raiding crops. They directly interact with humans and indirectly interact with humans. They start sharing pathogens and parasites. There are a lot of negative impacts.
Well, one would think, okay, so there are a couple of things that they've done in some of these conservation areas. They've added a buffer zone between the park boundaries and the neighbors. And also electric fences. What are your thoughts on those?
Yes, they did start using electric fencing in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where they have a really problem gorilla there, especially who they have to keep darting and moving back into the forest. I mean, I think in every case where gorillas are habituated for tourism, they are used to coming into farmers' fields. The buffer zone was not a great success in Bwindi because when they created it, they left all of the crops in that zone behind. So the gorillas then learned that it was okay to eat these crops. They weren't being penalized anymore. Mm-hmm. And they soon came out past that buffer zone and are now traveling further and further out from the forest, all the way up to the road.
Well, so what is your biggest concern here? You mentioned disease. How easily transmitted between apes and humans are these diseases that you're talking
about? Very easily. And, you know, these are diseases that the gorillas can get from the local population in addition to the tourists that are coming in to visit. A lot of the diseases are aerosol transmitted. We share a large part of our genetic information with them, so it's very easily transmitted. We've given them measles. We lost 6 gorillas to measles. We've lost gorillas to upper respiratory infections. You know, we've actually had mountain gorilla doctors come in and vaccinate these populations against measles. On a side note, in Western Africa, they lost about 95% of their population to Ebola in this one country.
Right.
So just the introduction of one infectious disease in a very small area can basically wipe out the entire population.
Right, and a danger to humans as well.
Yes,
so
yes.
A great threat. But okay, so Michelle, of course, we're talking here. I remember reporting years ago in Brazil and you know, this guy telling me that the greatest enemy of conservation is poverty, right? And that the pressure on the local governments, the local authorities to create revenue. How is that going to balance out? I mean, are people listening to these warnings that you and other primatologists and scientists are concerned about, that if apes become a sideshow, in effect, that they're not going to be saved?
And that is where I am right now with my research, is looking at it ethically, taking an ethical approach, this biocentric approach that gorillas should be valued for their own worth, not for what they can give to us. And they have become a commodity in so many ways. And the local people in this win-win situation isn't working anymore. You know, they feel that they're being exploited. They're not being properly compensated. I just read an article the other day where they're now including the Batwa, who were removed from the forest originally when it was gazetted a national park. They're now letting them take out tours. They're charging $80 for each tourist. So let's say 10 go, that's $800. Uh-huh. They're paying the guide, the Batwa guide, $3.50.
Wow. I can just imagine it being like, you know, when the Chinese bus first came into Boston, all of these different sources are going to be struggling for the same kind of population of tourists, and it will just multiply. So a lot to look out for. I want to thank you for sharing this story, and I'm really looking forward to your TED Talk on Saturday.
Thank you very much.
Michelle Goldsmith is a primatologist and science professor at SNHU. She's a one-time colleague of the celebrated anthropologist Jane Goodall, and you can learn more about her upcoming TED Talk and the pros and cons of ecotourism at wordofmouthradio.org. And you can watch her TED Talk. We're going to be streaming online on Saturday, and also at Red River theaters here in Concord.